As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to The Athletic NBA Show, Monday through Friday, on The Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to Tampering.
For this beautiful game of basketball that we all love and talk about every single day.
With Sam Panic.
To be able to bring people together.
What do you do, baby?
Reportedly at the center of an NBA investigation
into tampering accusations.
And the message to executives in the league is
stop talking about players on other teams.
What did I do?
And the charges filed.
Impermissible contact.
Was it right or wrong?
Tampering charges are really difficult to prove.
You know me, I talk.
Kind of awkward to even talk about it. I can't even mention teams anymore.
Ask me what I like to play with Kevin Durant.
The trial you want with tampering.
They're always ahead of the rules.
It's not rocket science.
I have tampered with the guys.
I didn't tamper. I'm just telling you what happened. I'm just telling you what happened.
Hello and welcome to the Tampering Podcast, part of the Athletic NBA Show Network. I'm Sam Amick, NBA national writer at The Athletic, here with the usual suspects, which sounds like a usual thing, has not been lately. Very happy to welcome back. We're going East Coast first, Mr. Slater. Fred Katz in the house. What's up, brother? How are you?
I made it this time.
I'm here. Knicks beat writer.
Podcast.
The Knicks had to go out and put their training facility very far from the Garden and complicate your life. So we miss you every once in a while on this pod.
Yeah, well, it's one of many ways that they're socially distancing right now.
And on the West Coast, as always, Anthony Slater, Warriors beat writer extraordinaire. Where are you at these days, Slater?
I was going to say, not as always on the West Coast. I spent the last week on the East Coast, but I am back. And do you guys know where I am right now?
Are you like in the gym?
Nope,
is that a gym behind
this
you?
This is much better than the gym. This is a bunker suite in Chase Center. I know this is not great for the listeners because I'm showing these guys on Zoom and they can't see it. But you know the bunker suites? Have you guys heard of these bunker suites at Chase Center?
No.
So they're called bunker suites.
Sounds like there's a nuke coming. It's very frightening.
Well, it is a suite where your seat is also like the fifth row, basically. And if you've been to Chase, it actually creates a kind of bad situation where a lot of times at halftime or even pregame.
Oh, yeah. I've heard about this.
Yeah. People are down in the bunker suites, you know, partying, having a great time. I'm showing you guys what it looks like down here right now. And then they go or, you know, and then maybe they wait until 6 minutes left in the third quarter to go up. And it creates this strip that is very visible by the TV because it's like the fifth row of just empty seats where below it, they're filled. And above it, and definitely in the second deck, it's all filled, but it's just this weird strip. So we are down here. Do you know why I'm at Chase Center? Can you either of you gather?
I don't, but I'm loving the radio tease voice. Tell us, please.
I was just attending the Team USA press conference. Grant Hill.
Hey,
Grant Hill's
yes,
about, you know,
yeah.
three doors down right now, chatting with Mike Dunleavy Jr., who is a Warriors assistant GM, because they just introduced Steve Kerr with, like, you know, Grant Hill was handing him a Team USA jersey, like he was signing him as a free agent. And they just did that at Chase Center. So that's where I was this morning.
Slater, I feel like I heard on another one of our pods, does Joe Lacob come out kind of early to the third quarter almost to mitigate the optics of this whole bougie crowd being late arrivers? Is that accurate?
I believe you heard that from Kawakami, I think on the Hoops Adjacent. I think... You know, you could view it one way, like cynically, like he's doing it to like show there is fans and there is support. But Joe Lacob's also just like a nut fan. That's
crazy,
like,
fan,
he's out
right?
there and, you know, Kevon Looney has a duck in layup to like, you know, cut the lead to five. And he's like, yeah, yeah. And it is funny. in those early third quarter moments when it is him courtside, no bunker suite people behind him, and then like maybe one other fan. But that's Joe Lacob.
I like
maybe,
it. I like
maybe
it.
They're all horrified because they named them bunker suites.
Right.
There is.
It's a horrifying name. Seems like poor marketing.
Legend. I was trying to come up with a joke about, you know, if the tax gets too high, they're all going to be running for the bunker suite, you know, one of these days. But the money's being well spent at the moment.
They also have this, like, you know, I'm looking, it's 9 different HD TVs, like, pushed in together that show the game. And apparently, from what I've heard, although I haven't been down here during the game, show it from your seat, what it would look like. So they're like incentivizing
these. I feel like this might, I'm going to shamelessly campaign. We got super producer Andrew Schlecht on the line as well. We haven't had a lot of YouTube spotlight, you know, on this tampering pod. I think Slater is making this pod YouTube worthy. I mean, we got inside access to the Chase Center bunker suite.
There
Fred,
is the
maybe
screen.
If you and I can show off where the hell we are, then it'll get it over the finish line here.
You see that weird Steph Curry portrait behind me? That's in here.
Yeah, he looks like Jesus.
I hear there's actually a legendary double bunker suite down here where Salesforce, Mark Benioff, bought 2, cracked a wall out and turned it into 1 and made it like a rainforest cafe, which is apparently legendary. Nice. Salesforce. I don't know. We've probably spent too long on the bunker suite.
We have a segue here. So, you know, the bunker suite is where you party and have a good time. And no better way to describe today's NBA than having a good time and partying. My goodness, gentlemen. We're going to try to keep it as light as possible, as entertaining as possible, as always. But, you know, we're kind of tiptoeing back into dark times, not only society at large, but the league feeling the ripple effects of COVID-19 and the Omicron variant that is wreaking havoc on the league. So rest assured, if nothing else, you're going to get one positive thing out of all 3 of us today. We have done some copious research to come up with something that doesn't make you, you know, want to run for the bunker suite with nobody else in it. But it is tough right now, guys.
Actually,
yeah, who you got behind you?
Yeah, somebody just came in with some popcorn. It's for later, but there is other humans down there.
Get your popcorn. That's fitting. We're a few days away from the Christmas Day games. And I mean, we got superstars galore on the shelf and COVID protocol. Some guys asymptomatic, some not asymptomatic. Nobody seems to know, you know, whether we have consistency on testing, consistency on process right now. The union and the league have been talking endlessly about how to get through this. I'll start it this way, guys, and give me your 2 cents. You know, I am of the strong opinion that, and it's been laid bare the last week, is that the league is obviously making a choice to treat this thing as an endemic versus a pandemic and to barrel through and just kind of count figure out the damage on the other side. I was trying to be more sensitive than I should have been there, but it's just as rough. We got guys. I mean, I'm all for players getting opportunity. You got guys getting call-ups who never thought they were going to see the NBA stage. They're moving games, canceling games. Where do you land on the optics, the ethics, all of the above when it comes to how the league is handling this challenge right now?
I'm not totally sure on the ethics, to be honest. I go back and forth. Here's the thing. Both sides want it. Like, both sides want to continue to truck on. I think in some ways the owners can be labeled as greedy or just only caring about the money and that sort of stuff. And obviously there are plenty of situations in which owners are guilty of that. The reality is that both sides kind of want the same objective, that a stoppage is not good from a financial perspective for the players or for the owners. I think both sides are kind of trying to figure out ways to make this happen. People talk so much about a stoppage. I don't know if a stoppage, honestly, would be that much more effective in terms of controlling COVID than continuing to play on. And the reason I say that is because when you have a stoppage, then the players are out of your actual protocols. They're out of your actual rules. You know, now guys can go out, they can do whatever they want. They're not necessarily following the rules that they might have to continue to follow if they were staying in the league. They're not getting tested as often, presumably, kind of similar to what we saw during last year's All-Star break. You might come back and there might be players who are now testing positive when you come back, an inordinate amount of players. So that's one scenario that you have to take into account.
I don't want to speak out of turn. Fred, I have a hard time thinking, and this is hypothetical at this point, obviously, but I think if they did do a stoppage, which I 100% do not think they will, you know, the point would be, you know, you would have some protocol. Like, no, it's time for everybody to play by these rules, and this is what you do for the next 2 weeks, and we try to figure out on the back end. I don't even think it's worth getting into that because I think
it's not going to happen. I mean, look, it's also skipping steps, which is probably what I should have said first. It's skipping steps because the reality is they eliminated so many of the actual procedures that they implemented last year especially in terms of testing, which they've obviously started to implement again now with upping testing and all of that, which are things you can do before you stop.
Well, so non-medical expert alert here. You know, I mean, none of us are coming from some doctor background. I just think it's leaning towards, and I would point towards the NFL more than the NBA. I think we are heading towards a moment where they kind of just let asymptomatic players play. And maybe that's just through not testing. You know, we probably had a large amount of got positive case guys who were not being tested in the first couple of months just playing. Because particularly with vaccines, a lot of these guys just don't show symptoms. Or, you know, maybe they wake up with like, you know, feeling a little achy. But in general, they're not even saying anything. They're not getting tested. They're going and playing. Just, you know, like it would happen in 2017 if maybe you had a light flu or, you know, the Jordan flu game. He's sitting there on the court with a respiratory illness being, you know, I don't want to get too deep into it, but it seems to me that's where the NFL's leaning of it, particularly by, I think, the time next year rolls around in these sports. You know, Sam mentioned the keyword there, endemic. That kind of means like it's just here. And that just kind of like society may have to come to that acceptance again. Like I'm not coming at it from like a crazy informed perspective. It just seems to me that that's where the acceptance level is coming, that it's around. If you're sick and you test positive, you're out. But in general, I mean, I think that's kind of what they did the first couple of months. It was like, don't ask, don't tell. And then now they're kind of having to, but I don't know. I don't know where you guys are at on it, but that just seems to be where things are trending, particularly in the NFL.
My two cents. So the league, my understanding is, like you said, Slater, the endemic word is what they are using. And so that's not just me coming up with that. That is their hope. That is their, or not hope, that's their pulse that they're taking on it. The prospect that you raised that has been on my mind about asymptomatic players, you know, kind of letting it fly, even if they're positive. I talked to another media member about that today. We were kind of gaming it out. And it's like, listen, this particular person had talked to a player, and I'm third person anonymously using this, but it's still informative, is that the one player was like, listen, I'm not comfortable playing with somebody who's positive and who's asymptomatic. Like, I should have the right to say, no, I'm not good with that. And so are they going to keep that anonymous from the guys on the court? What about the fans? I had a neighbor who kind of brought this up. Like, what about the fans from a legal standpoint? You know, at minimum, do you deter them from coming to the game if they're sitting there going, wait, there could be positive guys on the court? Like, they might be asymptomatic, but if they give it to me, there's no guarantee I'm going to be. Those are all considerations. That's a lot to get through. But in general, for sure, they're going to keep barreling through. You know, I've talked to owners about this too within the last couple of days. And the sense I got there was that it's terrible from a competitive integrity standpoint, but there is a sense that everybody is going through it and there's a level playing field. Now, it's not level in terms of what the virus is doing, but, you know, the rules are unofficially the same for everybody. So, you know, they're obviously all trying to get to Christmas Day. Christmas Day, let's say the games go ahead and happen, you know, 5 tip-offs, you know, great, cool, amazing. How many stars play? How awkward is that day going to be?
So how many of the main stars that are playing that day are out right now? You got KD, I know's out. Are the Hawks?
Giannis.
So
you have guys. You have guys who are out in the protocols in each of the 5 games. So I actually have this written down. Well, So the Hawks have Trae Young in protocols right now. And then they're playing the Knicks, who have 6 guys in protocols, including like RJ Barrett, Obi Toppin, Emmanuel Quickly. The Celtics have 7 guys in protocols. They're playing the Bucks, who have 4, and that includes Giannis. The Warriors are playing the Suns. The Warriors have 2. The Suns actually have none. This is as of recording. We're recording this Monday afternoon. the Nets are playing the Lakers. That's your premier game, and the Nets have 11 guys in protocols right now, I think, and the Lakers have 6. And then you got the Mavs at the Jazz, and the Mavs just got their third put in protocols, and the Jazz don't have anybody.
The big things are the big names, right? I mean, because that's what the league wants to sparkle those matchups as KD against LeBron, as you know, Steph Curry against Chris Paul and Devin Booker. But right now, you know, Trae Young is the big Hawks name out. You know, we mentioned KD, Giannis, if he's not back.
Harden, Kyrie.
Yeah, Harden, Kyrie. That's the big problem. Then you can't really mark those games on a day, by the way, that's going against the NFL.
They don't have alternatives, guys. This is, you know, starkly different from the bubble season where they obviously shut down and they did the bubble. And then in you know, season number two of the COVID experience, as you remember, they only built out the first half of the schedule and they gave themselves all kinds of leeway in the second half to fix these problems. That leeway is gone. The schedule is set. And that's the other thing you're seeing here. I mean, you know, if they did end up canceling anything, pausing anything, you're just, you know, you're saying goodbye to that money. You're saying goodbye to that part of the schedule. The season just gets shorter. I don't think they would push it out, you know. So I think we're just kind of stuck with an unprecedented bad quality of basketball for an indeterminate amount of time, where they are hoping that more and more players get booster shots because, you know, again, non-medical expert alert, but, you know, the reading that I've tried to do is that certainly you're talking about significant difference in numbers for folks who are boosted versus the, you know, the Pfizer or the Moderna vaccine or J&J. That's important. Get the booster in players' arms and then try to just get people back on the court. And then the system is going to continue to evolve as far as players getting in and out of protocol quickly because of the way that the league now sees the virus and the whole endemic component of it.
Yeah. And Sam, just adding context to that, I mean, the league stance dating back to last season, I mean, the league stance has pretty much been, and Sam, correct me if this is outdated and they believe something else now, but I don't believe they do, is that they don't think it really transmits during play. When they have breakouts, this happens because guys are in locker rooms together and they're in team meetings together and they're on team planes together and all that kind of stuff. But in terms of the Knicks are playing the Celtics and Josh Richardson was playing them on Saturday night, and then Josh Richardson enters protocols on Sunday, they are not of the belief that Josh Richardson is anywhere near likely to have transmitted it to somebody he was playing against on the Knicks. And they're going off of, you know, 15 plus minutes within 6 feet of somebody else over a 24-hour period, which is the CDC guideline. So that's something as well, which
I think you're probably right, Fred. The part that blows my mind about that, and I'm not trying to be too glib, but it's like, why did we, you know, I mean, we have millions of pounds of hand sanitizer that we've all used for the past couple of years. The idea that passing a ball around a court, you know, never transmits anything among, you know,
hey,
all
it blows
these players.
My mind, yeah. Too. I'm relaying what the stance the league has taken. Look, I remember when I was covering the Wizards last year and the Wizards were playing the Celtics, at the end of the game, Bradley Beal goes over to Jason Tatum and they had a nice hello. They're very, very, very close friends. So they had a nice hello and they hugged and whatnot. And the next morning, Tatum goes into the protocols. He had COVID. And so Beal ended up having to miss the game because of contact tracing. And it was not, and I'm talking to people during that time, and the reason he was in contact tracing was not because he had guarded Tatum for that game, which he did. The reason he was in contact tracing was because they wanted to know how long those guys were talking for. They had to know how long that conversation was for, and they were actually using Second Spectrum, you know, like the ghost defenders on Second Spectrum we see. They were using Second Spectrum to see, all right, how much time did each player spend within 6 feet of the guy who tested positive? In this case, that was Jason Tatum. And if it's under 15 minutes, you're good. And nobody spends anywhere near 15 minutes within 6 feet of somebody on another team during a basketball game, which is something that I learned while covering this whole thing.
So what matters here, though, is also like the lifestyles of players that they're leading right now, which is like the lifestyle of the country, which is like it's... the country's, you know, the whatever you think about it, the mood of the country, the general mood is pretty much over it. You know, everyone's going out to pack restaurants. Everyone's kind of doing what they did pre-pandemic. I'm just covering, you know, this Warriors road trip, which, by the way, they exited the road trip with two guys in protocols after the Lakers went east and then exited that with a bunch of people in protocols. But, you know, Steph Curry's breaking the record and he's going out, you know, and being photographed at a New York hotel and or a New York restaurant in a crowded restaurant. And Kevin Durant is coming over, by the way. And Kevin Durant later went into protocols, came over to that celebration, pictured by the New York Post. You know, Draymond Green has several dinners that he's sending, putting Instagram pictures out on this road trip. And like, you know, that those are just the stars who are pictured. We all know every player is doing this, particularly when they go on the road. To me, that's, it seems like road trips maybe spring some of these little mini outbreaks. But also, you know, you have, you know, I asked Draymond Green about this, like, idea of, like, is he getting worried? Is he kind of, like, ramping back his activity on the road? He's basically saying, no, he got the vaccine. He got the booster shot. He did his job. He thought the idea of the vaccine was so he could kind of live his life again. And he's going to live his life again. And I just generally think, you know, every player is different. Their comfort level is different. But I just think societally and permeating throughout the league is just this idea of like, they're not like Fred said earlier, okay, you can shut down the league. Like, they're going out to eat and the country doesn't seem to be shutting down
right.
restaurants.
And that's just, not because they're NBA players, to be clear. That's because they're out, people. And that's what so many people are doing now.
Listen, I mean, I'm sitting, you know, you guys are responsible for obviously focusing on one team, right? As a beat writer, I'm in LA right now by choice. So I took a trip as a national guy where it's like, did the thought cross my mind? I mean, and I should clarify there. If you guys weren't comfortable, the company's been amazing and said, no, you don't need to travel because everybody's got their own feelings. For me, I thought twice about this LA trip. I'm now staring at downtown LA as we speak. Staples Center's across the way. And you know, you do consider these things right now, but I'm a little bit like some of these players. Like, we're going to keep working. We're going to keep doing our thing. And Slater, I wanted to kind of fold this into the conversation that you had with Andre Iguodala. I know it was a press conference, but you guys had, I thought, a pretty pointed back and forth about this kind of stuff. Now, Andre, if anybody doesn't know, is a longtime member of the executive committee for the Players Union and a guy who I would argue is, you know, on the short list of most influential players in the league, kind of low key, you know, doesn't have that star power as some of the other guys, but always knows what's going on, always has a voice. Talk about that a little bit, because he got into the economics of the league a bit, and he's obviously a pretty incisive guy who you could see him biting his tongue, which he doesn't do often, but he does do at times. What did you make of what Andre had to share there?
He used the term, we have our fiduciary responsibilities.
To the shareholders.
And I mean, at the end of the day, he's correct, right? That is, he tried to boil it down to that. It is about money. And, you know, he is talking to, you know, he mentioned his role in the players union and this idea that, you know, you were talking earlier about how, and Fred, how different players have different opinions about their comfort level and their willingness to play through a pandemic, go out to restaurants, whatever. He is talking to a lot of these guys. I mean, he's such a sounding board for so many players across the league. And you could tell, I mean, at the end of the day, he understands, and I'm sure he's relaying to players that may not just have such a perspective on the business side of the game. Like, these games need to be played because these, you know, TV ads need to be sold, and these, you know, all this money needs to be created by just the product on the floor. And I think he has, like you said, biting his tongue. He has general deeper thoughts on just like the usage of athletes, you know, on a grander scale. And we can get into, obviously, you know, or we don't need to get into necessarily the racial components that he has with all this, but like, that is, I think, where he's at and where I think I would agree that the players are at, like, we're just going to play through this.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Yeah, no, I thought it was good. As you were breaking that down, I was trying to pull up some old notes from when Andre and I talked about some of the similar stuff a few months ago, and it was in the context of Ben Simmons at the time and some of the criticism he was taking. I mean, he makes good points that go beyond COVID, which is that when the money reaches this kind of a level, it is a machine, and the machine needs to keep going. That is a scary...
Especially because it didn't. I mean, that's a key thing, right? They've lost a lot of money throughout all this.
Right.
And I just think there's no appetite or almost like financial ability to like stop again. And like, you know, I don't know. I mean, that it to me, it's like small restaurants that have somehow survived through this, or even big restaurants, chains, whatever. I mean, I think there's so much of an economic impact that I don't none of us even really truly comprehend, right?
And just adding to that, I mean, this comes down, and I even just did it at the start of the pod, which I'm going to now critique myself for, but it so often gets phrased as what's good for the players and what's good for the owners, and then you leave it at that. But so many people who are neither players or owners during that shutdown had extremely difficult circumstances during the last league shutdown last year. I mean, so many people around the league were furloughed or laid off or things along those lines, you know, just trainers and people in ticket sales, which become extremely untenable jobs when there are no tickets to sell and things like that. So there are a lot of people who are regular, everyday, non-public figure people who make $80,000 a year or $60,000 a year. And, you know, they you know, their lives are seriously impacted by a shutdown too. So it's more than just players and owners as well.
Guys, before we pivot and get a little more positive here, I want your opinions on the player component specifically regarding, you know, all the different players that have tested positive. And I'm just going to be kind of brutally honest about even my own reporting and our, like, the media industry at large, I think needs to do a better job of painting the picture of how badly the players have been hit by COVID or have not been hit. Because I feel like one of the glaring omissions in this conversation is just how concerned should the players be for themselves and for their family. Because the narrative from the league and from owners for, you know, almost across the board is that players are getting through it. And that is, so that's like a rough description of the data, right? That they're getting through it relatively easily. But then it's like, man, Austin Rivers just had an interview in the Denver Post. I don't know if you guys saw it. That was like pretty frightening because he was a vaccinated guy that just got it and described his own fear, described being up late at night, having very heavy breathing. Joel Embiid had COVID for a long time. Jason Tatum has talked about, you know, longer effects of his experience. What are your thoughts on that part of it and how I just don't feel like we've had clarity as to how badly hit the player community has been?
Damian Lee was considered one of the first breakthrough cases. This was actually last season. He had been vaccinated, but he got it late in the season, you know, after he was fully vaccinated. And it was considered like, whoa, wow, a breakthrough case. Now that's obviously very common, but he got brain fog and, you know, he ended up missing more than a month and you know, really took a long time to get his conditioning back and spoke about it publicly. And it's, you know, it's scary for these guys, particularly, you know, for several reasons, but, you know, they have to use their lungs, right? Didn't Jason Tatum say he had to have an inhaler last year?
Yeah,
I believe.
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, for a while he was getting over it. And like, it stinks. Like, this pandemic stinks for so many reasons. And you know, Sam, to your question, I mean, it's really player to player. I know plenty that aren't really going through symptoms, including, you know, I know like the Jordan Poole case for the Warriors. Like, it's pretty asymptomatic. They're just kind of waiting for
I'm just saying, like, if the whole idea is going to be we're going to barrel through, it's an endemic, and players are getting through just fine, that does worry me a little bit, because 5-10 years down the road, are we going to be writing stories about players who say, yeah, I probably should have spoke up more at the time because I dealt with this, I dealt with that.
Sam, 5-10 years down the line, much will be written about this pandemic and its after effects. It's economic, it's physical, like the toll it's taken. Like, yeah, you're probably right. I mean, like, should they stop the league because of this? Again, like, I feel like I'm speaking in such a non-expert
way. I'm not necessarily saying that stop the league part. I'm just a little, I do have anxiety about that, you know, that idea that if you tell the public that players are getting through fine, is that responsible? Is it accurate? You know what I mean? And we have anecdotal information all over the place that says it's not.
I'd say any player that wants to tell his story, like Austin Rivers wanted to tell his story, they should, because that is important. There are plenty of asymptomatic cases also. Those should be noted. And the fact that we're becoming, it's becoming more asymptomatic, you know, if you are a vaccinated person, this should be part of the conversation too, right? If you're trying to, you know, promote people to get vaccinated, you're much more likely to have a much less severe case of it if you're vaccinated. So yes, I think tons of stories need to be told, including those players who really go through it too. I mean, I don't know. It's crazy. I mean, how many minutes into it in it this NBA podcast are we in? We're deep diving.
We're 27 minutes in, and I keep. It's funny because Andrew's so good at his job that I know he, you know, with good reason, is cognizant of the fans who might tune out because it's COVID and it's real life, and you kind of listen to a pod like this to get away from real life every once in a while, whether it's this or social justice, things like that. Like, it's just going to be right in front of us, and we have to talk about it.
Well, look, the Warriors gave the Raptors a win the other night. They handed Toronto a win because of what's going on COVID-wise. They decided to not bring all of their best players to Toronto because they did not want them to have to go through customs, do the COVID test there, do the COVID test on the way back, because they didn't want one of their main guys to test positive and be quarantined in Toronto for 2 weeks and derail their season. So they opted to give the Raptors a win. That, you know, this COVID stuff is affecting the product.
Right, right.
That is
100%.
What really matters.
100%. All right. Well, it's all going to be have a COVID tinge to it, but let's talk about some of the hoops here and some of the stuff that is going on. I'm going to go last unless we have objections, but let's go to Mr. Katz. What is jumping out at you that isn't entirely COVID related and it might be positive to lighten the mood here a little bit, my friend?
Yeah. Let's not use the word positive though. That's use literally any other synonym.
Let's be positive. Yeah. The COVID campaign. Yeah, no. Go ahead.
Okay. Let's talk about the Memphis Grizzlies.
Sure.
Okay. About a month ago on this podcast, remember Slater turned to the two of us? I shouldn't say
Just call me hater. Just call me hater.
Well, I shouldn't say turned, but faced the same direction he was facing.
With that smarmy smirk of
into
his
Zoom
smarmy
camera.
Damn.
Wow. But remember he asked, who do you guys think is 30th in the league in points allowed per possession? And then he dropped on us, the Memphis Grizzlies. So John Morant last played on November 26th. Since November 26th, they were 9-10. Since November 26th, the Grizzlies are 10-2. They have been destroying. On November 26th, they were dead last in points allowed per possession. So dead last in defensive efficiency. Since that date, they are first in the NBA defending. They have been the best defense in the NBA over basically the last 3.5 weeks. That is really cool. Especially with Ja Morant out, they've been winning like crazy. They've totally reversed the season that they've been having. They're fourth in the West right now. They aren't switching quite as much. I don't know if that's a Morant not being there thing or if it was an intentional change to their defense. Dylan Brooks has returned, which has helped a lot. Brooks has been so good for them. He's got 5 straight 20-point games. He just dropped 37 on Portland. They are fun. They're playing great. I'm excited to see what happens when Ja gets back, because the on-offs are not friendly to Ja, and I'm really curious to see how that plays out over a longer season. But they're
Fred is setting the stage for Ja being.
No, I love Ja. He's fantastic, and he was having a great year, and it was like 19 games worth. And the fact that they've been rolling since he wasn't there is going to make his on-offs even more extreme. But they're like 15 points per 100. worse with Ja on the floor this year. And a lot of that is because of defense. And well, so
your point guard matters in defense.
Yes, it does. But drawing you from last to first, he's probably not that extreme. But I'm just curious to see it. I mean, they've been fun. They're rolling. They're playing great. Desmond Bane is good as hell. They're good.
Fred brought it with a lot of Memphis data there. I like it.
Yes.
I agree. I mean, that's a really good one to look at. And that I am curious if, you know, what does their defense look like when Ja Morant's back? Because, I mean, you guys know, like, a lot of times these young guards come up and the spectacular nature of their offensive play just, like, captivates Trae Young, for an example. And then usually this is the time of the career, year two, year three, where it's like, well, you know, people start going, well, have you looked at the defensive metrics? Have you looked at the efficiency? You know, have you looked at the on-off? And this might be a moment, I don't know, but it might be a moment for Ja where people, you know, like Fred Katz are going to mention the fact that 30th in defense and then Ja Morant gets hurt first in defense. So it's interesting.
It helps Dylan Brooks get back. Dylan Brooks is having a great
he's
year.
He's great.
He is having such a good year.
He's good on Steph. I remember in the play-in, like he really defended him well. So.
Oh, he is.
We all need some Dylan Brooks sunglasses.
He is great, remember that presser he
did last year.
Oh yeah, he is great one-on-one against those types of players. Just like scoring guards who aren't like huge wings. I mean, he can guard wings too, but he is especially good against like the Stephs. I think he might be the best Bradley Beal defender in the league. He is great against Beal.
Denies the catch really well. You know, it's like the work he does when he's not, you know, he's not like necessarily hounding your dribble. He's just picking you up full court. And
all. Definitely. Well, part of the reason that their defense has been so much better is like, you know, I mentioned his presence, but they were really bad. They just weren't good guarding screens. They just were not good guarding screens. And Dylan Brooks is so good. You know, when he comes around like a pin down or something like that, he just fights through those every time. There's so much effort and his footwork's great. You know, Andrew and our producer, Andrew, is reminding me that Zaire Williams is also in health and safety protocols. They've changed. They look really good. They have a tough stretch coming up too. They got a 3-game road trip. They play in Oklahoma City, or they play home against Oklahoma City tonight. So we'll see. I'm assuming that's going to be a win, but who knows? I might get owned by the time this podcast comes out. But then they got at Golden State, at Sacramento, at Phoenix, which is going to be a very interesting little run for them to see if they can take one of those.
Are you struggling to close deals? B2B selling is tougher than ever, and that's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. LinkedIn Sales Navigator is a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals, and show you hidden allies so that you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you up-to-date first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/NBAshow23. That's linkedin.com/NBAshow23 for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/NBAshow23 and get started.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So I can never let a good segue pass up, Slater. So I'm going to jump in and actually be the second guy who does something. Something cool. We're going to call it cool, not positive, because Fred doesn't like positive with very good reason. Dylan Brooks, and this leads into what I wanted to talk about. He makes me laugh a little bit because he's one of those guys that is a coach's favorite, right? The other day I'm reading our esteemed Blazers beat writer, Jason Quick, was breaking down Portland struggles and kind of made me laugh because like he had a lot of stuff in there about how Chauncey Billups had
mention Dylan Brooks as the kind of player that, you know, that you respect. And he just kept putting Dylan Brooks up there. And the way Jason kind of framed it was like, you know, clearly a little bit of a subtle message there. Like, we need more of what this dude has and we don't. So you know you're doing something right when you're almost kind of unintentionally busting up opposing locker rooms. Dylan played in Sacramento the other day where they have interim coach Doug Christie doing his thing. COVID ripple effect. Alvin Gentry has been positive. Thankfully, he's feeling good and doesn't have symptoms and is in a good place. But Dylan was destroying the Kings. And I was watching that game thinking to myself that it was literally, I mean, he's not a star, but he is one of those guys that he plays with a force that I said to someone I was watching the game with, like, he's not going to let the Kings win this game. He's just not. And so, hell of a player. But the segue is to talk a little bit of Kings because, you know, still up and down. They've been winning a few games here and there. But it is wild how the Doug Christie coaching, you know, kind of experience has gone relatively well so far. I got to make sure I'm accurate on that. I've admittedly lost a little bit of track. But, you know, Doug comes in for Alvin. And as you guys remember, when they fired Luke Walton, you know, right out the gate, we had reported that Alvin and Doug were the two top candidates. And the Doug candidacy was somewhat uncomfortable because you could tell that it was certainly coming from the ownership side and had a little bit of that tint to it of, okay, another former King who's beloved by the fans. If the team's not playing well, and this is me talking, but it's just this strong sense of like, you know, how can we distract the fans from a bad team? Let's put another beloved former King out there. And it didn't really land, I don't think, publicly, but the way this has happened, which is it just kind of is what it is. Alvin tested positive and then Doug ends up getting that assignment, has been interesting. He seems like he's connected well with the guys. They had some friction on the bench last night when Mo Harkless and Buddy Hield were getting into it over defensive assignments, which I actually think is a good thing. They're 2-1 under Doug, but you know, again, in the category of things that we never thought we would see and that COVID has created, this one has been somewhat entertaining.
And, that just coveted play-in spot that the Kings want so bad is there for the taking. They are actually the 10th seed right now. 13-18 get you in the play-in right now. You know, Portland's right there at 13-18, but you know, again, I feel like we've had a bunch of Kings conversations like week to week, and obviously it just has not gone well. But at the end of the day, even when you go back to the beginning of the season when there was much more optimism around the Kings, it was like 9-10 seed, right? Well, they're the 10 now because the bottom of the West, they've had
their own protocol. I mean, they've been, you know, COVID absences left and right. De'Aaron Fox is out right now. Rashawn Holmes has been injured, had an eye injury. So the other night they had Nemeas Keita, their second round draft pick. I mean, again, we talk about cool things that have a COVID component to them. The first player of Portuguese descent to play in an NBA game, and we'll never know how long it might have taken for him to see NBA time, if not for all these absences. But nonetheless, it was actually pretty cool. He made a little bit of an impact and made some history along the way.
Someone is going to end up having some great feel-good story because of this. Like, they're going to come in.
Isaiah Thomas?
Yeah, maybe. Who knows? Maybe. Yeah, Tyler Johnson? Someone?
DeMarcus Cousins?
Yeah, someone.
I mean, CJ Miles?
Yeah, or just some guy who's been in the G League for 4 years and, you know, we're
Jamal Crawford?
With.
Can we get Jamal back in the league,
you
please?
Know what?
Let's go.
He's fun to watch, but I don't need Jamal Crawford back in the league because he is so...
Oh, Fred.
He's so good on TV. I selfishly want to continue to see him broadcast games.
You can do both.
That's fair. Draymond does it.
As Draymond. Yes, yep.
Man, Jamal Crawford is so good. Like, what a natural. He's amazing calling games, I think. Anyway.
So we should mention on the Kings, because, you know, you mentioned 2-1. This bunker suite is getting ready for a big Kings game tonight, Sam. The Kings are in it.
I know.
SF, so people
I know.
Are
I skipped town at the wrong time.
I know, right?
Wait, can I ask a little related question here?
Sure.
Who do we think are like the bottom two play-in teams in the West right now? Because right now you got like 12 teams within a couple games of each other. It feels like,
yeah. We talked about this a couple weeks ago with Darnell. You know, I think it's Kings, Blazers, Wolves are to me is like the mix. Like basically, pick two of those because I don't think that Thunder's not making it. Pelicans.
You got Portland out. Oh, your Blazers in there. I'm sorry.
In that three where one of them will be out. I think the Spurs, Rockets, Pelicans, Thunder are four teams that will not make the playoffs or the play-in, which means you just have to pick one out of, I mean, you can pick one of anyone above that, but I think it's a Blazers, Kings, Wolves, like pick one of the three.
That's Slater, fine. Not a Spurs believer.
Jakob Poeltl just hasn't done it.
I think they've won 7 out of 12 now.
Okay, then
DeJounte Murray's having a great year.
Fred, me and Sam answered this question a few weeks ago. You weren't here. You got to give who are you knocking out?
I don't know.
You got to show up, Fred. I mean, 90% of the job is showing up.
He was in protocol. I mean,
like
this is a just. It's too depressing of a question for me to answer. It's not quite depressing enough for me to ask, but it's too depressing for me to answer. I mean, I think. I guess Minnesota is playing really well lately. I think my answer is probably just going to be whichever teams are the healthiest. I mean, I think Dallas will end up climbing up once Doncic is back from the ankle injury. But it's going to end up being whoever's the healthiest. But I like San Antonio.
We know.
I'm into San Antonio.
I was going to say another Kings 10, to quote the great Tristan Thompson, who did a kind of an epic press conference a few weeks ago, is he was breaking down all the teams that the Kings lost to on their terrible 0-4 road trip. And he talked about how everybody knows San Antonio doesn't even want to win. You know, Oklahoma City doesn't want to win. I mean, he was just putting their business out in the street. But, you know, Spurs have won a few games. I like the T-Wolves. Other than, by the way, Cat coming out and saying that he's the best shooting big man of all time. Cat needs to calm down a little bit. There's a guy named Dirk that got something to say about that. But Minnesota, if you're just picking in terms of entertainment value, there is admittedly part of me that would love to see them get it together enough to be, you know, to be there at the end. Cause what Edwards has been able to do is fun, is exciting. And the whole backdrop. I mean, honestly, as far as 6 degrees of COVID, you got to be rooting for Carl, everything he's been through with his family. It'd be good to see him have some success.
Yeah. I mean, I think Minnesota is also a good pick to get in there potentially too, because they're the kind of organization that would swing a trade to try to get in there, to try to get better right now. I think San Antonio is in a position to where they could kind of do a similar type of thing. I know that organization historically does not like to make trades, but they've been trading a little bit lately, and they have a lot of guards. Just kind of a surplus where they could make a move. They could throw a Lonnie Walker in there. If they wanted to make it bigger, they could do something. If they really wanted to, someone out there they really liked with DeJounte or with Keldon Johnson or a number of the young guys they have on that roster. Derek White is obviously a candidate that could be thrown into something too. So those two teams are teams that I feel like could try to make a trade to get better. It just makes sense with the roster constructions.
All right, Slater, the last cool item of the pod. What do you got, brother?
So, I mentioned earlier that throwaway game in Toronto the other day. Well, it created, I thought it was a fun matchup. You had Scotty Barnes against Jonathan Kuminga. And if you guys remember going back to the draft, that was, where they were all being debated up in that 4, 5, 6, 7 range. And both of them played really well. Barnes, who's had a really, an encouraging rookie season, had 21. He just looked really good. And Kuminga, who has not been getting many minutes for the Warriors because of their title aspirations, had 26 in a spot start, hit 4 threes, a bunch of dunks. He's really popped in his, cameos. And it just, as I'm watching the game, I just keep thinking, man, this is a really good draft. And then you just look at the top 10. And I mean, we knew it coming in, but you always want to like do these temperature checks, every few weeks on this rookie class. And just the top 10, Cade Cunningham to me, obviously after a slow start where he missed start of the season, like he's been really good. Jalen Green, I think he's been what we thought, like a low efficiency, high volume scorer that showed a bunch of potential, has some unbelievable highlight dunks. Evan Mobley, I mean, we all know like that's probably one of the stories of the early seasons, what Cleveland's doing. And so much of that has to do with a rookie center, which we never see. He was a great pick at 3. Scotty Barnes, I mentioned. Jalen Suggs at 5 is probably of the really the top 10, maybe the most, disappointment so far. I mean, he's dealing with an injury issue. Josh Giddey, we can bring Andrew on, but I think in general, Thunder fans are happy with what they're seeing with Giddey. I mentioned Kuminga. Warriors fans are loving him. Franz Wagner in Orlando, he's been like, he starts, he's had big moments, 28-point nights. Davion Mitchell at 9. Sam, you could maybe speak to that, but I think Sacramento seems pretty happy with the trajectory that he seems to be on. And, you know, you keep going through the first round and you can keep finding Chris Duarte starting in Indianapolis. Looks like a player. Alperen Sengun is doing some really interesting stuff in Houston. Trey Mann. Should we talk Trey Mann? Do I need to talk Trey Mann? I think Andrew might pop in on this.
I saw that tweet the other day,
Andrew. But I just think in general, as I was watching Barnes and Kuminga, who were 4 and 7, really go at it in that game, and both have really good nights, it's just like, man, this rookie class is infusing this league with talent in a lot of spots.
That's a great one. It's going to be so hard to fill out a rookie of the year ballot this year. Like, we are, every single voter is going to leave off somebody who they feel like, ah, this guy totally deserves to be on the ballot. You know, like, there are more than 3 really good rookies. And you only get 3 spots on your rookie of the year ballot.
Indeed. Guys, along those lines, awards related, and I think we can leave it with this. I have a self-indulgent question for you at the end. And I should have planned on talking about this, but that's all right. We can ad lib here. I wrote about MVP last week, and I'm curious. We've had some good conversations in the past, you know, debating the Suns and is it Chris Paul or Devin Booker? The Jazz, and is it Donovan Mitchell or Rudy Gobert? And some of those types of things were in, you know, the piece that where I tried to get my, you know, clarity for myself on where I saw it. Your quick 2 cents on how that race looks right now. The breakdown of how I had it as of last Friday, Steph Curry, 1, Kevin Durant, 2, Mr. Jokic, the reigning MVP, 3rd, Giannis Antetokounmpo, 4th. Then it got probably, you know, a little more controversial or, you know, worth talking about. I had Rudy Gobert at 5. I have Mr. Paul at 6, Trae Young at 7, DeMar DeRozan 8, Donovan Mitchell 9, Zach LaVine 10. Feel free to grab any of those things, but quick thoughts on the MVP race that we'll be talking about all year.
Well, so every year, Tim Bontemps at ESPN, a few times a year, yep, mass texts every single one of us and asks us for our MVP ballots, right?
Well, I was on that thread.
And then he posted a story. I told him that,
yeah. Real quick, I told him that, I said, so we have a, texted him back. I said, sorry, buddy, we have a policy to not help the evil empire. And he wrote back, he says, well, it's clearly not very well enforced.
Yeah, so he posted the story. You know, he pulled 100 possible, plausible MVP voters, posted a story probably a week and a half ago now. And Kevin Durant received only 2 first place votes out of 100. And I was half of those 2 votes.
East Coast bias.
Kevin Durant, I just want to throw this stat out
there. New Yorker.
I just want to throw this stat out there because it's outrageous even by Kevin Durant standards. He is shooting 60% on long twos this year. 60% on long twos. That means Kevin Durant averages as many points per possession, shooting the most inefficient shot in the game, as a 40% three-point shooter does, taking a 3. That is obscene.
Do you get as excited about 40% three-point shooters, Fred?
Well, I can think of another 40% three-point shooter.
Come at me with 60% from 3. Yeah. Then I'm excited.
I mean, look.
No, he's been great.
He's just having such an incredible year. The Nets have gone through. Harden is having a down year. Joe Harris has been out with the ankle. Kyrie hasn't played. The Nets have the best record in the league because of him. You can make an argument he's been their best defensive player. Him and Bruce Brown are their 2 best defensive players. In the early season when the Nets defense was really outperforming expectations, especially in the early year, he was great. I cannot say anything that demeans Steph or that demeans Jokic because they are both having absolutely outrageous seasons. I just think KD's the best player in the league in my mind, and he's having one of the better seasons of his career. And I think he's a tremendous choice. I figured I would be in the minority when I put in KD. I didn't realize it would be to the extreme that it was, where there would be only two KD voters and I'd be one of them. But he's just on
another level. Well, I think my recollection is when around the time that people were voting for that poll, I mean, the Nets have continued to surge. So they've created more distance in the standings since then. I also think, to spin it forward, I'm just curious to see if Kevin's narrative changes at all. I mean, it seems pretty obvious that Kyrie Irving's return as a halftime player is connected to Kevin's workload. And so as great as he has been, you're getting this strong sense that, all right, I'm not sure Kevin's down to play 37, 38 a night. I mean, sure, if he's going to do this from, you know, all the way through the finish line, then he could end up raising that trophy again. You know, he's won an MVP once before, but I don't necessarily know if that's going to happen. But he's been incredible.
Sam framed it right. When the straw poll was taken, the Warriors at the time were probably like, you know, 20-3. This just like the story of the league. And Steph was in an outrageous stretch. And then as Steph Curry went and actually claimed this record, he was been cold. He slumped up into the record. It's why it took so long to get the record. It's why New York City was able to see the record. Because as Kevin Durant and the Nets were on fire, including what he had, a 51-point night, and even on the same night, which was mentioned by some people, that Steph broke the record, Kevin had a really good night across the city. But the thing is, narratives in the MVP at the top of this ladder should shift every five games because we're still at such a small sample. And the truth is, I think Kevin has got himself right, you know, to where Steph is, where if maybe the straw poll was taken today, it's, you know, 45-55 or something like that.
But it'd be closer.
But
yeah.
Guess what? Kevin Durant just entered health and safety protocols. You know, I don't know how many games is he going to miss? And we all know how missed games affect it. I still, you know, Sam mentioned a bunch of names and there's some really great stories within there. Like obviously, you know, you Gobert, Mitchell, DeRozan, who was awesome against the Lakers the other night, 38 in a win. But those guys are not going to win MVP. To me, it's the top.
No, but I do love that, you know, that conversation, like, because we've talked Suns a lot, right? Like, so the Suns are 6-2 since Devin Booker went out with a hamstring injury. And, you know, Chris is balling. I was looking at Gobert at 5 and Chris at 6, and I thought it was pretty tight. And you're right. Those guys aren't going to win it, but, you know, still doing.
Yeah. Yeah. No, the story's good. I was just more talking like who I actually think is going to win MVP. It's the two we've been mentioning, obviously, that are the leaders. I think Giannis has a case he's got to get out of health and safety. But if the Bucks just rattle off and climb back and are like a 1-2 seed, because, you know, voter fatigue does not exist with Giannis anymore, right? Now that you've won the title, like, to me, it's there for him to win if he just surges.
I don't think it exists at all like it did last year. I do wonder, you know, this is not right, but this is just human nature. You know, that idea of like, you're going to give him 3 and 4 years. Like he better really separate himself. I think some voters are going to look at it that way.
As a voter, after what I saw in the playoffs last year, like if he plays to the point that he looks like he could be the MVP, I will not hold anything. You know, I will vote him MVP. If
even Jokic, man,
This is Jokic's problem. It's going to be record. They're just not going to be up there. You know, it's a little like Steph last year. Like Steph had this unbelievable season, like statistically all that, but you know, Denver's going to be near 500. Maybe look, if they're not, he's in the race. Because can you imagine if he drags Denver to like a 3 seed?
The on offs with Jokic are just absolute insanity. They're just crazy. They're like almost 30 points per 100 possessions better when he's on the floor. It's outrageous. It's like nothing I've ever seen.
I do not think this is going to happen, and we're I almost feel strange saying it because of like the Lakers are not playing well, but like LeBron has a path, right? If like the Lakers go crazy in the second half, it just seems like it'll have to be LeBron. Isn't that it's becoming obvious, like this is just got to be a LeBron season. And I don't think he wants to at his age, but if he could just like surge the Lakers up, turbocharge them, we know that can turn into a story.
I didn't see that final point coming as I sit here in LA. But yeah, who knows? Stranger things have happened.
Because I don't think they're going to surge up the standings, but he has looked really good lately. They haven't, but he has.
Yeah, and he's ramped it up defensively too. All right, guys, it took us a minute and it was all justified, but we eventually talked a little hoop. Good to see you both. Slater, I think the bunker suite should become a regular thing, you know, with popcorn and, you know, maybe bring
Might
your guests
live
in there.
Down here. Wonder how I much know. This space would cost with San Francisco real estate.
I mean, when I make those drives down to Warriors game, maybe they could put a cot for me in the corner and you know, save a few bucks for the company. Appreciate you guys. Fred, be good, my friend. And by the time we talk, it'll be post-holiday, and hopefully you guys get a little bit of a breather and run into your families along the way. But thank you for everything you do, and we'll talk to you next week.